A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. We'll look at the impact of the economy, technology, and society on the arts, the importance of arts education, and how these organizations and ensembles are adjusting and innovating as they face the future. Today, we'll check in with the Metropolitan Opera Guild, which has just launched the first in a series of online courses designed to provide an in-depth look at opera. I'll speak with Stuart Holt, the Guild's Director of School Programs and Community Engagement, about the online courses and some of the Guild's other programs. As always, let's start off today's program with a look at some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Conductor Maren Alsop will serve as jury chairman and final round conductor of the 2021 Van Cliburn International Piano Competition. Duties of the role include consulting on the jury selection process and conducting the Fort Worth Symphony Orchestra for the performances of each of the six finalists. In a statement on her website, Alsop said participating in the competition was another way to show her commitment to mentoring young musicians. A report by the New Jersey Attorney General has raised additional questions about the proposed sale of Westminster Choir College by Rider University to a Chinese company. In the March 27th court filing, Assistant Attorney General Jean P. Riley reviewed issues related to Rider's responsibilities as a trustee of the Princeton-based Choir College, which it acquired in 1992, including its right to sell the school, and also about the status of Westminster's $19 million endowment fund in any such sale. The Attorney General is required to review and sign off on any such decisions involving charitable trusts. Founded in Dayton, Ohio in 1926, Westminster moved to Princeton in 1932, and the property on which it is located was ultimately donated by Sophia Strong Taylor, a donation which the Attorney General's report found created a charitable trust. Bruce Afrin, a lawyer representing some of the opponents of the proposed sale, said Riley's report supports many of the arguments put forward by Westminster supporters, who fear the sale would put Westminster's survival in question.
The fact is, the AG's opinion is that Rider cannot profit by selling the campus, which means that even if they have the legal right to sell the Westminster campus to the Chinese buyer or to anyone else, Rider can't keep the money. The money has to go right back into the trust that was created in 1935. And that trust requires the funds to be used for the purposes of Westminster or to go to the Princeton Theological Seminary if Westminster is shut down. Either way, Rider itself cannot keep those monies. So this eliminates any economic reason for Rider to sell the campus, since it can't benefit from the money. The second point is that the Attorney General is saying the $20-plus million endowment that Westminster has, which is quite a lot for a small school, cannot be transferred to the Chinese company because it is intended only by the donors for the purposes of Westminster Choir College. And that since the contract would allow the Chinese to shut down Westminster, the transfer of the endowment to the Chinese buyer would be illegal. So in both ways, the Attorney General is saying that this transaction, in their view, is illegal and would not be able to go forward.
The report also said that Rider's response to its inquiries have been inadequate, including a six-month delay in handing over documents and in heavily redacting them, and that it is awaiting answers from Rider on additional questions. Sale contract details revealed earlier this month suggest that Kai Wen, the Chinese company that has agreed to buy Westminster, would be allowed to shut down the college sooner than the minimum of 10 years that had been previously announced.
Kai Wen will have the power under the agreement of sale to shut down the school at any time if it believes it's economically impracticable to operate the school. That's a standard that would allow Kai Wen to close the school for any reason at any time, which means that the transaction really gives the property to Kai Wen as a commercial company and allows the college to be closed down on day one.
In a written statement, Rider spokeswoman Christine Brown said the Attorney General's report raised no surprises and that the university will respond to the claims through future court proceedings. The next court date is set for April 15th, although the Attorney General has said it will likely need as much as 3 months to review additional information sent by Rider. The university announced its plans to sell Westminster and its property 2 years ago in an effort to raise funds to cover its own budget deficit. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. The internet has opened up a world of new possibilities for those looking for educational enrichment, including music programs from institutions such as Juilliard, the Curtis Institute of Music, and Yale University. Now, Operaphiles can turn to the Met to learn more about opera, whether it's feeding a general interest in the genre or drilling down into a particular work or composer. The Metropolitan Opera Guild, the organization that serves as the educational and supportive arm of the Metropolitan Opera, recently announced its launch of an online learning program featuring video lectures, readings, and other related materials. Individuals can sign up for the classes and finish them at their own pace, although they do have 60 days to complete each course after purchasing it. The first course that's been released is devoted to the words of opera, exploring libretti and librettists. For more information about the series and the Guild's other educational and community programs, I spoke with Stuart Holt, the Guild's Director of School Programs and Community Engagement.
When we decided to pursue the concept of online learning, it was a direct result of our podcast, which was our first sort of foray into the idea of electronic education, if I can describe it that way. We get Guild members from all over the country and, frankly, from all over the world who get our brochure that lists all of our programming that we offer here in New York City. But the response was, I don't live in New York, and I'd love to be able to experience that. So we took a step back and said, well, if we're already creating this programming, is there a way for us to capture it in an audio format? So almost 3 years ago, we started doing that, capturing our lectures and presentations, and then converting them into a listenable format in the form of a podcast. And that podcast sort of took off with over 500,000 individual listens from people all around the world consuming our programming either on their way to work or when they're exercising or when they're relaxing at home. And again, from that came a request, was there a way for us to enhance the learning by having either visuals or reading materials or things that students could consume in an online platform? So over a year ago, my team and I sat down and thought about developing programs that could be presented here at the Guild and then could also be transformed and repurposed into an online program that people who aren't able to come to New York can experience in their own homes whenever they want to.
And now the first course is libretti and librettists.
Tell
us, first of all, a bit more about the topic and how this will be presented in terms of the format.
We chose as our first course to launch a four-part course that is on operatic libretti and librettists. And we felt like we talk a lot about composers and we talk a lot about their style and the genres that they compose in and the musical eras that they're working in, but we don't always spend a lot of time on the folks that are creating the text and how does that work in terms of their work with the composer directly, but also their work on their own time in using a poetic meter or using poetry as a springboard for their work. And we really felt like this was a way for our audience to have a different entry point into the operatic art form. So we divided up into four sections, each looking at a specific group or single librettist, and then looking at the operas that are connected with that. So we spend quite a bit of time talking about Lorenzo da Ponte, who was a librettist who worked frequently with Mozart, who had a really colorful life, and an opportunity to explore what he brings to the table in those operas with Mozart, but also folks like Salvatore Camerino that worked with Verdi on his works, and what does that look like, and how did he work as a librettist. In each course, there is a lecture video that has been recorded from a live experience here at the Guild. There's also readings that the instructor has provided with guiding questions for students to complete, and also video examples and audio examples. The audio examples are sometimes linked to musical scores, so people can follow along as the example is playing, and sometimes it's just a scrolling bar that moves across written text so that the listener can follow. So we try to engage all kinds of learners, both aural and visual learners, with the materials that we're providing online and also the way that they can interact with those materials.
Who are the instructors?
Our first instructor is Naomi Baratera. She is a Guild lecturer here on my staff and also a doctoral student at the CUNY Graduate Center here in the city. And gives a really great, robust background of information in terms of her experiences as not only a student, but also as a teacher here at the Guild. We'll be rolling out a program on The Ring in May, and that course will be hosted by Victoria Bond, who is a composer, conductor, and also educator here at the Guild as well. So a variety of voices and backgrounds will also allow our students in the online platform to engage with different voices and different teachers.
You mentioned the upcoming series on Wagner. What range of topics and material will that cover?
That will look specifically at The Ring itself. So again, it will be a four-part course, one on each one of those four operas. And within those operas, Victoria does a really fantastic job of exploring the music and the motifs that are used in those operas and how they're transformed over the course of four operas. So really, it is strongly music-focused, but looking at the use of the leitmotif and Wagner's use of that in identifying characters, but also using it as a storytelling device for audiences, hopefully enriching the experience when they go to the opera house of that aha moment that even though I know that they're not talking about someone, I know that they might be appearing on the scene because I hear their motif happen. Or when we see an object, such as the sword, we hear that motif right away and we think, aha, okay, every time I hear that motif, I know there's going to be a discussion of the sword. And how does that weave its way through these four operas?
Now, how will you go about choosing and narrowing down the topics?
Oh, that is always a challenge, to think about what works best in an online learning platform. So you have to think about, if I'm going to engage with a topic, is this really the best topic to engage in, number one? Number two, we also get a lot of feedback from our audience here in New York that comes to live events that say, you know, I wish I could revisit this, either watch a video of this lecture or listen to the musical examples again. So those two things are somewhat informing how we're going about selecting future online learning opportunities. The other thing is we at the Guild want to be a larger resource to the opera community. So in thinking about what my colleagues are doing around the country and frankly around the world in terms of education and engagement, I also take sort of hint from their work to see what could we bring to the table with these programs that might be of use to their work as well. So sort of sneak peek would be that this summer we're going to look at adding a course that is a score reading course, taking folks through reading a piano vocal score and what do those notes on the staff mean, what does a treble clef, a bass clef, musical notation that we see in the score, and helping audiences, even if you don't read music, become more informed about what is on the page and how that can inform your opera-going experience.
What were some of the challenges that you found, or some of the excitement of being able to take going from the podcast, which would be primarily an audio-based format, to something where you really had to be a little more multimedia in terms of written materials, visuals? How were you guided in that process?
So we were somewhat guided in doing some pretty strong research and looking at what other online learning opportunities look like. There's a program called Masterclass, which is an online learning platform looking at things like Coursera that does online learning, and also discussions with our colleagues at Juilliard that also do some continuing adult education that has some components of online learning. And we had to think about, you know, what, as you said, those multimedia pieces that we wanted to add to the learning environment. So we already know that the sort of lecture component was really important. So translating that audio that we have in a podcast to actually seeing the real lecturer there, being able to experience their passion and their enthusiasm for their topic in the privacy of your own home or your office or wherever you're watching this program. The second thing was being able to take those moments where in a lecturer, the lecturer may tell the audience, I'd like you to look at this example from the score. That provides us with an opportunity to then put that score up on the screen in front of the viewer, and they're able to see what the lecturer is talking about. So the challenge is taking a lecture that you videotape and then rewatching the lecture and thinking about what are the important visual components that I, as the viewer at home, need to see full screen on my screen that was projected either in a PowerPoint or in a slide on the screen in the lecture hall. So always a challenge of sort of pulling those multimedia pieces in and really curating a video that serves the at-home viewer differently than it served the live in-person viewer. And then also just the creation of handouts and written materials. So looking at securing PDFs or creating materials that had links to existing material online so that the audience that's at home can really engage with all the materials that the live lecture goer has at their fingertips when they're in the room with us.
Registration is limited for this format. What type of interest and demand have you seen?
The interest has been very well. So we have started out of the box and we've already had 12 people sign up to purchase the first course. But we have also had a lot of people who have signed up for the platform to experience the preview. Now, of course, I also know that not everybody is going to be into operatic libretti or librettist, and they're will probably, my guess is, be more folks who are interested in the idea of The Ring and Wagner and that experience, just as we hope that there'll be people that are interested in score reading. So we know that not every course is going to appeal to everybody, but the feedback we've gotten is really great. People love the opportunity to engage with the work at home on their own time. They know that they have 60 days from the time that they purchase the course to the expiration date, so they can still do self-paced, but they have to sort of manage their time as well. And they feel that that's more than enough time to get through the readings and to watch the lectures. They like being able to accomplish the readings, but then go back and watch the videos again. And when we did our Wagner course here live at the Guild, we actually use the learning platform to host all of the readings for that course. And the participants in the course said, oh, this is really great. I have access to these readings. I can go back and revisit them after the lecture is done. And they were excited to know that once those lecture videos are uploaded, they can recommend the course to friends and family and colleagues who may want to experience the ring in a new way through this course just like they did.
I wanted to circle back to the podcast for a minute or two.
Sure.
What range of topics have you been able to include in that, and what types of responses have you seen?
So we include a wide variety of topics in our podcast. We do a lot of what I would call pre-performance lectures, an hour-long, 50-minute lecture that is really preparing you to go and experience one single opera. Normally, when there is a high-definition broadcast at the Metropolitan Opera House, the Wednesday before that broadcast, the podcast episode is always about that specific opera. So it really allows audiences that are going to their local movie theater to experience the opera in that format to get a little bit more education before they step foot into the theater. Or if they're coming to see it here at the house in New York, they're also able to experience that. But we've also been able to add some other topics. So in February, we did a two-part series that was a conversation with soprano Harolyn Blackwell and Broadway performer Robin Payne, looking at the similarities and differences between opera and musical theater. Both women have had careers in both fields, and also both are African-American artists, and to talk about what that experience is like for them, sharing their journeys and their experiences, and also what they are currently sort of giving back to their community and to the artistic community as well. We just did a session last week that explores the idea of religion in opera. So not every episode is just on one specific opera. Sometimes we're able to use additional programming that we've got in the Guild pipeline or to explore a topic with either a lecturer or an interviewer who wants to unpack a topic that really lends itself to that online audio format. We're able to curate some new learning opportunities for the audience.
And how do you see the online learning experience expanding and fitting into the mission, the Guild's mission?
I think, you know, the big thing about online learning is the direct connection that we find with the Guild's mission, which is about making opera accessible for everyone. You know, one of the big things we've said in both the course that's available now and the Wagner course that's going to go live in May is that you don't have to have music reading ability. The resources are there for you to explore and to connect with, but you don't have to know all about the score to be able to take the class. You also don't have to know all about Wagner or all about Lorenzo da Ponte to take the course. So making it accessible for those audiences is extremely important for us. But it's also about the idea of the Guild's mission to share knowledge, being a beacon for education. So this allows audiences around the world to have an educational experience that's directly connected to opera and in many ways directly connected to the work that's happening on main stage at the Metropolitan Opera House, whether that be live in the theater or going to see it in the movie theaters around the world. So there's an accessibility that's there, but there's also the idea of being an educational resource, not only for the Metropolitan Opera, but also for the greater opera community.
Walk us through a little bit about the background and the history of the Guild and where it sprang out of.
The Guild was founded over 80 years ago by Eleanor Robeson Belmont, and it was created and developed at a time when there wasn't an education department at the Metropolitan Opera House, and there also wasn't a fundraising or development arm So it was formed for two reasons. One, to raise money to support the Opera House, which is what we still do today, and to also provide an education connection for the Opera House, which we also still continue today. It was also the organization that was the creator of a regular magazine, which has now morphed into the monthly publication we know as Opera News, the top opera magazine in the world, providing information originally about productions that were happening specifically at the Met and evolved over time into information about productions and work happening around the world. The Guild itself continues to be a source of funding and support for the Opera House in terms of becoming a Guild member and supporting that work. And also, it helps in terms of education through our adult education programs like our podcast, our online learning, and all of our live learning opportunities that happen here in New York, but also through working with school kids, through in-school residency programs where we're working with students ranging in age from pre-K all the way on up through college, and then also our dress rehearsal program, seeing students come directly to the Opera House and experience the art form really before anybody else gets to see it.
Well, actually, I was going to ask just a little more specifically about, the range of both community outreach and education programs. How have you seen them develop in recent years? What are some of the areas you've been able to move into as, the demographics and the landscape, the cultural landscape changes?
So our programs have sort of evolved and changed over time. I mean, I think the biggest thing that I see with our school programs is just a greater collaboration with school teachers in the classroom, finding ways for us to connect the components of opera to classroom learning, whether that be through the creation of an original opera or an original piece with students, or if it's in a weekly choral class where we're singing as a group, exploring themes and ideas that are related not only in the music we're singing, but also in the work that students are doing in the classroom. And I think it has become sort of a beacon for the idea that the arts are not just for art's sake, but there's a connection to learning and a connection to socio-emotional development and socio-personal skills for students. So they have these arts experiences, yes, but then the takeaway from it is greater collaboration, creative thinking, the idea of being able to cite evidence when they make choices for things. So on a sort of microcosm of school programming, that's sort of the change that we've seen. On the adult programming side, I think the podcasts and the online learning are a direct result of things that we've heard from audiences that want to be able to engage with learning in a different way. You know, with over 100 episodes on our podcast channel, that means that if you want to have a binge of opera, similar to binging a show on Netflix or on Hulu, you can do that. The same is true of the online learning. Once you sign up, you're able to breeze through that course in a weekend if you wanted to. So the idea that we can consume a lot of material in a short amount of time, I think, is a big change for our audiences, that we're sort of fast-paced and we want to be able to consume these things right away. We can do that. And then in terms of programming, I think we are hearing audiences who want to learn more than just a pre-show lecture. They want to do a deeper dive into something like operatic libretti and librettis, or they want to have more sort of behind-the-scenes knowledge of what goes into designing a production or creating a production, or hearing an interview with a singer about what their journey or their experience has been. So the landscape continues to change in terms of how people want to engage with the art form beyond just the basics of knowing what the plot is, but how can I explore the other components that go into opera and the people that are working on those components?
That was Stuart Holt, Director of School Programs and Community Engagement with the Metropolitan Opera Guild. More information on the Guild, the courses, and other programs can be found at metguild.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you each week on A Tempo that focus on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world.
But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support of the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.